So we are holding on Kuf Aleph Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Continuing on the topic of halachas about Shabbos, miscellaneous halachas about Shabbos, Mishnah says, "Neger sheyesh beroshi glostera," and neger is a bolt that you use to close the door, like the kind, not the kind, for example, where you have that a crossbar that goes across the door. We'll talk about that later on in the Gemara. We're talking about the kind like you stick into a hole in the threshold, for example. We have these days, you know, they'll be attached to the door, you know, they'll be attached to the door, and then you just lower them. The kind they had in those times were not necessarily attached to the door, as we're going to see, but there was the same idea. You would put them next to the door and into a hole in the threshold in order to block the door from opening. So the Mishnah says, "Neger sheyesh beroshi glostera." Suppose that this bolt has a bulb or has a bulb at the end of it. It has one end of it is thick. So therefore, what it means is that you're able to. So therefore, if it didn't have that, then if it was just a plain piece of wood or metal or whatever, then you would have a problem, as we're going to say, with closing the door with it on Shabbos, because when you put it into the door and then into the hole in the threshold, it's like boina. Machlokes, whether it's boina d'oraisa or d'rabbanan, but whatever it is, if it has a knob, that's the word I was looking for. If it has a knob at the end of it, then it's more of a keli, because conceivably then you could use it. The fact that it has a knob, you can use it to crush things like spices. Now, you can't do that on Shabbos, granted, but the fact that it's a keli means therefore that when you put it into the door and into the hole, it looks less like boina. It's like using a keli, and we're going to give examples in the Gemara where you're allowed to use a keli for that purpose. So if it has this knob, Rabbi Eliezer oisiv Rabbi Yosi matir. Rabbi Eliezer says that even so, it's also to use it to close the door, unless it's tied to the door, as we're going to go on. But Rabbi Yosi matir. Rabbi Yosi says it's mutter even if it's not. So we're going to see in the Gemara the exact scenario, whether it's tied or how strongly it's tied, etc. Rabbi Eliezer says, I'll bring you a proof that it's also. Maisa the Knesset Shibit Tveria. It happened with a shul in Tveria. Show you Neugen bei Heter. They used to consider it mutter. They used to lock the door using such a bolt that had a knob at the end of it. Adjabaram Gamliel Vaskanim Vosrulan and Torah Gamliel and the Skanim came and told them it's also. So you see, it's also. Rabbi Yossi says it was the other way around. Isu Nahogaboy, just the other way around. They used to consider it also. They wouldn't use it to lock the door. Ovaram Gamliel Askanim, Beitirulahan, and then Ram Gamliel on the Skanim came and told them that after all it's mutter. So Adrabi, Rabbi Yossi says, you see, that's a proof from my opinion that it's mutter. Okay. So what's the scenario over here? The Gemara says, Benito Ba'agdai. If the bolt that we're talking about is. If it's tied to a rope, which is where the other end is tied to the door, and the rope is strong enough that you could pick up the rope and the bolt will hang from the end of it and the rope won't break, kula almalei pligi, then nobody has a machlokas. Even Rabbi Eliezer will allow you to lock the door with such a bolt, because the fact that it's tied strongly to the door, then it shows that this bolt is meant to close the door. Therefore, it's not going to look like boina, especially we're saying that the bolt has, especially we're saying the bolt has a knob at the end of it. The machlokas would be where the rope that it's attached to is too thin. If you try to pick it up by the rope, then the rope is going to break because the rope is too thin, or the bolt is too heavy and thick that the rope will break. The marsover. So now you have the machlokas like this. Rabbi Yossi says, "Kiven diyesh b'roshe glostera," since it has a knob at the end of it, and as we said, the fact that it has a knob means that you could crush spices with it. So fine, that's not a malacha you're allowed to do on Shabbos, but at least it makes it that it is a keli. Therefore, toras kli olav. Therefore, it has the rule of a keli, and therefore, when you're using it to close the door, then it doesn't look like boina. Or marsava kiven de'enin nito be'egdoi. Where's Rabbi Eliezer holds that since the rope is too weak, then it's as if it wasn't tied at all. We're going to learn in the next Mishnah now. We're going to say that if the bolt is not tied at all, then you're not allowed to lock with it, whether it has a knob or not. So therefore, so if it's tied with such a weak rope that the rope is going to break as soon as you try to pick it up by the rope, then ineffectively, as it says, it's considered it wasn't tied at all. So therefore, that's why he would say that it's also. Tosfos points out that actually, if it didn't have a knob, then if it didn't, what happened? Now we're talking about if it has a knob. What happens if it's tied to the door but it doesn't have a knob? So we're going to talk about in the Gemara soon about opinions about that. So Tosfos brings two possibilities. One is that if there's no knob, then even Rabbi Yossi would agree that even though it's tied strongly to the door, that's not good enough because it needs to have a knob. Or the other possibility is that maybe we're talking about over here that it doesn't have a knob, but we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara about whether the bolt is tied directly to the door or whether it's tied to the crossbar of the door. So those are the possibilities. By the way, the Gemara in Yevamos tells us a sequel to this machlokas like this we just have. You know, okay, it's a machlokas like any of thousands of others that we have in Shas. The Gemara in Yevamos tells us that actually this machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yossi became so heated, each one of them, they're holding a Sefer Torah, and each of them is trying to point to things to prove their point, whether it's allowed or not allowed. And the Gemara says the Sefer Torah ended up getting ripped between the two of them, because each one is pulling the Sefer Torah in their direction, and accidentally it got ripped. And Rabbi Yossi, the Gemara continues, Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma was there, and he was shocked by that, and he said such a thing that in a shul, as a result of a machlokas like that, a Sefer Torah was ripped. He said, I'll be very surprised if this place doesn't end up becoming a base Avodah Zarah. And unfortunately, the Gemara says that's what happened. So that was the after effect of this machlokas in the Mishnah over here. The Mishnah continues, Neger HaNigro. Now, what about, so we were just talking about a bolt that's tied to the door or not tied to the door, and we said where it's tied, but not with a very strong rope. What happens if the rope that it's tied to is long, and therefore, so the bolt is not hanging from the door, one end of it or both ends of it are on the ground. So that's a Nigro, it drags on the ground when you open the door. So Noilan Boba Mikdash, you would be allowed to, and Rashi says we're talking about where it doesn't have a glustera, because again, if it has a glustera, if it has a knob, then we just said we had the machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yossi, if the rope was strong enough, then both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yossi would agree that it's mutter. But here we're talking about where it doesn't have, the knob at the end of it, and it's tied to the door, but it's not tied. The rope is too long and it drags on the floor. So you wouldn't be allowed to use it outside. So it would be also drabanon to use it, because in that case, still the fact that it drags on the ground makes it look like it's not attached to the door. And therefore, when you use it to close the door, then you're doing boina midrabanon. But nolan boi b'mikdash, you'd be allowed to lock the door with it in the b'smikdash, because in the b'smikdash in general, we say that most isurim d'rabbanon, most isurim of shavus don't apply in the Beis Mikdash. Ava loy b'medina, but not anywhere else outside the Beis Mikdash. But if it's actually placed on the ground and it's not actually tied to the door at all, kan v'kan osur, then either way, even in the Beis Mikdash, it would be osur, because there would be actual binyan. If you took a bolt that doesn't have a knob, we're saying, and it's not even tied to the door, and you take it and put it to lock the door, you put it next to the door and into the hole in the threshold, then that really is boina. And of course, if it's an issur d'oraisa, then you can't do it in the Beis Mikdash. But so for sure not outside the Beis Mikdash. Rabbi Yehuda says no. Hamunach mutar b'mikdash, even if it's lying on the ground and not attached to the door at all, then Rabbi Yehuda says it's still not real binyan. It's only doima l'binyan. It's only drabanan because it looks like binyan. Therefore, again, ein shvus b'mikdash. So therefore, you'd be allowed to some mutar b'mikdash. V'hanigro b'medina. And Rabbi Yehuda says if it's dragging on the ground, meaning again, if it's tied to the door, but the rope is long enough that one end of it or both ends of it drag on the ground, Rabbi Yehuda says that's good enough for you to be able to lock with it on Shabbos even outside the Beis Mikdash, because it is tied to the door. So the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Ezo neger ha nigro shenolin b'mikdash avaloi b'mendina. What is the kind of bolt that drags on the ground where the Tanakama of our Mishnah is saying you're allowed to lock the door with it in the b'smikdash, but not outside it? Is kol shekoshru v'tolui, if it's tied and it's hanging from the door, the roshe echad magia la'aretz, and one end of it reaches the ground. In fact, it doesn't have to be dafka one end. It could even be that both ends reach the ground. The point is that even then we're allowed to in the Bais HaMikdash because it is tied to the door, but just the fact that one end reaches the ground is already reason enough to say that it's also d'rabbanan and therefore it would be also outside Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yehuda says, as he said in the Mishnah, that no, if it's hanging and one end or both ends reach the ground, then it would be mutter even in the Medina, even outside the Bais HaMikdash. Ella Ezo Negro Shinolin Mikdash Avaloi B'Medina. But Rabbi Yehuda says, I do agree, there's a certain type of bolt which you can use in the Mikdash, but not in the Medina. But what is that? Not where it's tied at all. Kol She'en Eloi Kosher V'Eloi Tolui, where it's not tied or hanging at all. And then when you finish, when you unlock the door, the shinto, then you take it out, and you put it in a corner nearby. So it's not attached to the door at all. And again, as we said, it has no knob. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, that's the kind of thing that I would say that is also, that's the kind of thing. And nevertheless, so nevertheless, it's still not deraisa. It's still not boina deraisa to use it. It's only derabanan. Derabanan, it's not also in the Bais HaMikdash, but it is also everywhere else. Okay, so who's the halacha like? Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, halacha could be Yehuda ben Nigro. The halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to one that's dragging. So if it's tied to the door, then you'd be allowed to use it even outside Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, Rashi explains that what we do is we pask in halacha like Rabbi Yehuda in only one of the two cases. Again, you have the case where the bolt is tied and you have the case where it's not tied, where Rabbi Yehuda allows it if it's not tied in the Bais HaMikdash. So that the halacha is not like him. Meforshim ask, I mean, sometimes the Gemara will ask Hilchos al Mashiach, why are we bothering paskening halachas that are going to be applicable only in Mashiach's times? Like this that we're saying that we can do it in the Mikdash is maybe a Hilchos al Mashiach, but maybe not. Maybe it has certain implications nowadays if you have to know what's also Daraisa versus Dirabanan, what's also in cases, let's say you have a Chola She'en by Sakana or other cases like that where you're allowed to bend the rules of Shabbos, whatever it is. Rashi and Tosfos both say what the Gemara is implying is if the bolt is not attached to the door at all, then the halacha is like not tied to the door at all, then the halacha is like the Chachamim that you can't lock the door with it. But if it's tied and dragging on the ground, then the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, even though one end of it is dragging on the ground, nevertheless, you're still allowed to lock the door with it. So Rava says exactly that. It has to be that the bolt is actually tied to the door itself, rather than, Rashi says, it can't be tied, let's say, to the door post. If it's tied to the door post, it still doesn't look like it's actually part of the door. Therefore, you still have a problem with it. But if it's tied to the actual door, then that's the case. We were saying the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, and it would be mutter. So the Gemara says, "Any, is that so?" Rab Tavla ikla l'mechuza. Rab Tavla one time visited mechuza. V'chaza lahu to have a toli be'ibra d'dosha. He saw they had a bolt over there that was hanging from the crossbar of the door. So like this, you have. Up until now, again, we've been talking about a bolt where it goes vertically. You put it down near the bottom of the door, and you push it downward, and it goes into a hole in the threshold. So one end of it is holding against the door, and the other end is going into the hole in the threshold. And that way it blocks the door from being open. But you also have a door can also have a crossbar, which is a similar kind of thing where you have. You have it on some doors nowadays, right? Where you have a bar that goes across the door, and you move it along the track, and you put it into a hole in the side of and you put it into a hole in the side of a, in the mezuzah in the side post of the door. So here you had that there were so here you had they had a bolt they had a bolt hanging from a rope from that crossbar. So not from the door itself. V'loy amalahu v'loy midi. And Rab Tavla didn't tell them anything, meaning that it's mutter. Now, why should it be mutter according to what we're just saying if it has to be dafka tied to the door? The answer is Ahun Nito Be'igdai Hava. The answer is that one, the rope was strong enough, whereas we said before, where the rope is strong enough, you could pick it up and then hold it by that. And therefore, so that kind of thing. So then it doesn't necessarily need to be tied to the actual door. Then it's good enough if it's tied to the cross beat, to the crossbar of the door, or maybe also to other things around the door frame, like the door frame itself or whatever. But up until now, we've been talking about where it's hanging from a very weak rope, where if you try to pick it up and then hang it from the rope, then the rope itself is going to break. Okay. So the Gemara gives an example of that. Rabbi Ivya ikla l'nahavda. Rabbi Ivya visited Nahavda. Chazi elahu gavra d'havah kakotir begemi. He saw there was a person over there who was tying the bolt with to the door with to kakotir begemi. He was tying it using a grass. Omar, so he said, "Dein loy nitroik, this will not lock." Meaning, in other words, you can't consider that this should be allowed to be used to lock on Shabbos. That it's tied with such a weak thing, like a piece of grass, that for sure is going to break. That can't be considered like it's tied. That's considered like it's not tied at all. And we just said that Rava said only if it's actually tied to the door, only then can you use it to close to lock the door on Shabbos. Okay, so far what we have then is that if it's tied with a strong rope, then it doesn't have to be tied to the door itself. Then it's enough if it's tied to the door's crossbar or whatever. If it's tied with a weaker rope, then we're saying that it has to be tied to the actual door in order for you to be able to use it. And if it's not, if it's tied with something so weak like grass, then it doesn't count as if it's tied at all. And again, all of this we were talking about where it doesn't have a glustera, where it has the knob at the end of it, then we said before it's enough even if it's tied with a weak rope, because that you have the fact at least it does have toras kli. It does have the shape and the function of a keli. Okay. Boy Reb Zeira nikmaz mahu. Reb Zeira asks the question, what happens if this bolt is nikmaz? Now, Rashi and Tosfos both explain that it means, let's say up until now we're talking about that you have a hole in the threshold of the door, underneath the door, and you take the bolt and you stick it into that hole. And again, one end of it is against the door and the other end is in the hole, and therefore that prevents the door from opening. What happens now if the hole is going, what happens if the hole has gone all the way through the threshold and now it's digging into the dirt below the threshold? So that's called nikmaz. So what would be the din? Would you be allowed to still close the door like that? The kavana is not to make a hole. I mean, you're not necessarily, but the point is, the point is, on the other hand, you are going into the hole over there. So that maybe looks more like boina. Fine, you're going to argue, there's not necessarily the problem that you're making the hole bigger, because you're not necessarily making the hole deeper. So you're putting it in. So it's dava sheina miskaven, and dava sheina miskaven is mutter, and it's not psik resha. The problem is, it's one thing when the bolt goes only into the threshold, then maybe we can talk about whether it looks like boina or not. But when it's going into the actual dirt below the threat, into the actual ground below the threshold, maybe that's more like boina. That's by the way, that's Rashi and Tosfos' explanation of nikmaz, and that's the one that's accepted lahalacha. There is a couple of the Rishonim bring over here an explanation from Rabbi Goin about a different meaning of nikmaz, where something along the lines of where the bolt itself has a groove in it, and then you have things sticking out of the door that go into those grooves. And the question would be whether again, maybe the fact that it interlocks like that, maybe that's more like boina. Amar Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef says, "Mighty boile, why is Rabbi Zeira even asking the question? Loi shmielai hodetanya. Hasn't Rabbi Zeira heard of this that we learn in a braisa? Nishmat osir. If the bolt is completely removed from the door, meaning as we said, it was tied by a rope before, and now the rope broke. So now it's just now you just put it in a corner when you unlock the door. Then it's osir, like we said before." That we said, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that that's osur, in that Rabbi Yehuda would say in the Bais Mikdash it's mutter, but anywhere outside the Bais Mikdash it's osur. But the Chacham would say even in the Bais Mikdash it would be osur if it's not tied to the door at all. But the Braisa says nikmaz mutter. If it's nikmaz, like we said, it goes into a hole in the ground, then it's mutter. But Rabbi Yehuda, I mean nikmaz af pishen and nishmat osur. Rabbi Yehuda says even if it's nikmaz, even if it's not nishmat, even if it's not broken off the door, then it's also osur. If it's nick, just the fact that it's nikmaz, that it's going into the hole in the ground, even though it's still tied to the door, then it would still be osu. Because again, Rabbi Yehuda would say, even though he's makel in our Mishnah in the case where it's tied or not tied, but where it's going actually into a hole in the ground, then he would agree that that looks more like boina, and therefore it would be osu. It's made to go up and down. And again, if it's attached to the door, then there's less of a question. But here we're talking about where it's not attached to the door. And we're saying it may be tied to the door, but the problem is that at the same time, it's nikmaz. When you use it to close the door, it goes all the way through the threshold and into the ground. So that would so Rabbi Yehuda says that that's osur. Afa pisha ena nishmat, even if it's not detached from the door. So even if it's still tied to the door, but nikmaz itself makes a problem. Va'amar Rabbi Yehuda amar Shmuel halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda b'nikmaz. And Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel that halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda with nikmaz. So there you go. So Rabbi Yosef says. So there is the answer to Rabbi Zera's question. Yes, nikmaz would be osur. But time am I, so why should it be also? Amar Abaye Mishum de Mechzi Kiboina. So Abaye says because once it's actually going into the ground, then already it looks like boina. With that said, though, the Taz mentions and the Alter Rebbe brings it lahalacha. This is talking about if the hole like unexpectedly started going into the ground. But if to begin with you have the hole itself was made that you actually have a cavity dug out into the ground where the bolt is supposed to go through the threshold and into the ground, then it would be fine. The nikmaz we're talking about is like where unexpectedly, like you ended up wearing a hole all the way through the threshold, and now it's going into the ground. There you have an issue in it. But if it's going deeper than expected, basically. But if lachatchila you made it in such a way that it's going to go into a pre-made hole in the ground, then it would be fine. Okay. Bomine Reb Nachumi Bar Zecharia Me Abaya. So now Reb Nachumi Bar Zecharia asks Abaya, Usalay Beis Yad Mahu. What happens if you make a handle for this neger? So let's say again, you have the neger, the bolt is not tied to the door at all, but let's say you put a handle on it in the middle. So now it looks more, now it resembles a hammer or some other kind of tool like that. So now it's a keli. So would you be allowed to use it on Shabbos? Even if it's not attached. So he says to him, in that case, then you're talking about something which is like a pestle. So now it's like the neger sheyesh bereshit glustera of the previous Mishnah, because that one had a knob at the end of it that you could use for grinding. So the same way over here, now you have something on it that you could use for grinding. So itmar, and therefore they said, if you made a handle for it, then it would be mutter. Like we said before, even if it's not tied strongly to the door, just the fact that it has a knob or a handle at the end of it is enough to make it a keli, and a keli you're allowed to close the door with, as the Gemara is going to give examples soon. No, there's nothing. It is, because nishmat means that it's broken off the door, that it was tied to the door, and now it's not. But now we're saying. Ah, so what about nikmaz? Ah, so there are Rishonim actually who learn that Rav Nachumi Bar Zecharia's question is actually about the case of nikmaz. Maybe nikmaz, where it goes into a hole in the ground unexpectedly deeper than it should, maybe that should be allowed if it has a handle. And therefore, the answer would be that yes, some of the Rishonim do learn that way. However, other Rishonim learn that not. The question was just, are you allowed to use it bechlal? And the answer is yes. So no, nikmaz would be osur regardless whether it has a handle or not. Because the fact that it goes unexpectedly into a hole in the ground is enough to make it like boina. No. So the Gemara continues. Hahu sharisa dehava beira pidos. There was a beam that was in the house of Rapidos dehavu madlu la beasara. It took 10 people to pick it up because it was very heavy. Vishadu la adosha. Then they would put it against the door. So like you have, they didn't have an actual bolt to close the door. So they had, like you do nowadays, like you put something heavy wedged against the door in order to prevent it from opening. Rav Pedos didn't tell them anything. In other words, it's mutter. Omar toras kli aleha, because he says, after all, it has the function of a keli, because being such a large beam, people could sit on it like a bench. So therefore, it would be the equivalent of taking a chair and putting it against the door. And therefore, it's mutter. The point being, in other words, even though it's very, very large and heavy, and you could argue for that reason alone, maybe it should be considered mukta. We've learned before about the concept of very heavy things being mukta because you don't usually carry them. But here, even though it's very heavy because you use it, because you regularly use it for this kind of purpose, then therefore it's allowed. Similarly, hahi asisa, similarly, there was a mortar. So it's a mortar, as we've said before, is a very large hollow keli that they use for grinding spices or whatever. So they had this to have a bay marshmul, which was in the house of marshmul. To have a machzekas adriva, it held an adriv, which Rashi says is a half kur. A kur is 30 sa. So this one held 15 sa. A sa is a measure of volume, not really of weight, but it's the volume of about 2 or 3 gallons of water. So therefore, so 15 times that. So this was a fairly large mortar. It's a fairly large keli. Shoda marshmul mishdiyei adasha, and marshmul allowed them to take it and use it to wedge against the door to close it on Shabbos. Omar, because he said the same thing. Todas kliolea, it has the din of a keli. So if we were to use it to grind with itself, of course it would be also because it's mukta. But you're allowed to move many mukta items l'tzodach gufoy umakoymai. And here it's l'tzodach gufoy because you're using it for a different purpose on Shabbos. You're using it to wedge against the door and keep it from opening. No, you wouldn't necessarily have to fill it with water for that purpose. It by itself might be heavy enough. The material it's made out of might be heavy enough. But the point is that, yeah. So you're allowed to. So therefore, that establishes another rule that, so again, if you're using a keli, then you are allowed to use, then you are allowed to use it to close the door, even if it's not actually attached to the door. And that was the thing about the glustera or about the handle that we said over here. But if not, then we're saying it needs to be tied to the door. And to the actual door, and we're saying also, if it's nikmaz, if it goes into a hole in the ground under the threshold, then it would be also, unless, like the Taz says, unless that hole was specifically pre-made for that purpose. Okay. Now we're going to talk about dinim involving making an oihel on Shabbos. I'm not real clear what the connection is of this with the previous Gemara, where we're talking about closing and then not closing doors. Maybe I guess the connection is because the problem with using the knob on the problem with using the bolt on Shabbos, we're saying is a matter of boina, and we're saying where boina is also and not also dirabanon, where it's also in mutu dirabanon, and here also we're going to be talking about making an oihel, which is also a subset of boina, when that's allowed and when that's not allowed. So Sholach le Rami by Yechezkel of Amram. Rami by Yechezkel sent a message to Rav Amram. Neimalon mar mehalin mili mal yosa. Tell us, please, some of the nice statements, some of the teachings in Torah, the Amrit lon mishmei de Rav Asi, which you previously told us in the name of Rav Asi, bekipe de arba, regarding the frames over a boat. So the case is you have over the boat these curved frames like that go over the boat from one side to another, and then afterwards they're able to spread an awning over them. Sort of like if you ever saw pictures of covered wagons from the old days, from the old West or whatever. So it's a similar kind of thing. You have these arch-like things that go from one side of the wagon to another, or in this case, from one side of the boat to the other. And then over it, you spread the cover and you tie it to them. So the question is, tell us a din about those kinds of things. The frame is there already, exactly. So Rav Amram sent back, Hochi Yomer Rav Asi, this is what Rav Asi said about it, Hani Kifi D'Arva, again, these frames, these bent frames that are over the boat, Bizman Sheyesh Behen Tefach, if any of the individual frames is a Tefach wide, where then it can be considered already the beginning of an oil, E nami ein behen tefach ve'ein ben zel ozeh shloisha, or if none of them are tefach wide, but between one frame and the next there's less than 3 tefachim, which is therefore lavud, then lemachar mevi machzela suporis alehen. Then the next day, meaning on Shabbos, you're allowed to take a mat and spread it over them. It's not considered making an oihel on Shabbos because you already had part of the oihel there. My timer. Moisifal oil arayahu, because then it's only adding to an oil aray, v'shapur dummy, so that would be fine. To actually make an oil, a permanent oil, would be also min haTorah, of course, that would be boina. To make an oil aray to begin with would be also derabanan. But here, where you already have enough that can be considered an oil, that because it's a tefach wide, or you have lavud over there, then you're allowed to extend it. So the Gemara gives an example of that. Hanu dichri dehavolei l'Rav Huna. Rav Huna had some rams that which were in an enclosure. Di mama bo tula. During the daytime, they needed shade. Uvaleya bo avira, but you couldn't put a roof on there permanently because at night they needed fresh air. So that means every day they'd have to be putting up and taking down an awning for them. Also lakameh de Rav. So he came to Rav to ask, what do we do on Shabbos? Omalei. So Rav tells him, zil koruch budya. Go take a mat. Go roll up a mat. Take the mat that you're going to be using over there as an awning. Roll it up. The shayer batefach, but leave it. You leave it on the frame over this enclosure where the rams are. You leave a tefach of the end of the mat sticking out from the roll. L'macha poshta, the next day you'll be allowed to unroll the rest of it. U'moisifal oil aray, who again, then you're adding to an oil aray because you already have one tefach open, v'shapur dummy, and therefore it would be fine. So a shlok, for example, so you have the same kind of thing. You open it, you make sure that's open one tefach before Yom Tov, and that way if it rains on Yom Tov, then you're allowed to open the rest of it. Yeah, another example of it would be with a baby carriage, if you want to open up the covering over it, the canopy over it, same thing. Now, one thing we see from a baby stroller, a baby carriage, whatever. No, not a playpen. I'm talking about a baby carriage where you have a cover over there. You have the canopy over there over the baby's head. Same idea. Well, I mean, as far as the baby carriage, obviously, if there's no eruv, then you can't use it anyway. But you could use it inside your own house or inside your own chotzer, but. You'd have to have it partially open before Shabbos so that you're not making an oil aray. Yeah. It's still in the house. It doesn't matter. It's the same way, for example, as you're not allowed to open an umbrella inside the house. Yeah. But one thing is, though, that the post can point out in this connection, the fact, let's say, in the case over here with the rams, the fact that the rolled up mat itself is wider than a tefach doesn't help us. There needs to be a tefach unrolled outside of the rolled up part. The same thing with these other things. Let's say you have, for example, you mentioned the shlok. You may well have that when you have it all the way pushed off to the side, the total width of the folded up thing is more than a tefach. That doesn't help you. You have to have unfolded of it a tefach. That's the point. He would leave it at least a tefach open outside of the folded up area. The same thing, for example, again, with the baby, with the stroller, or the same thing with the canopy of it. The fact that when the canopy is bunched up at one end is thicker than a tefach doesn't help you. You have to have a tefach sticking out beyond that before Shabbos. That's what I'm saying. The poskim also talk about, by the way, a similar kind of thing. You know, you have these folding doors. You have these folding screens that they have in some places. For example, you know, I've seen them in shuls, for example. Let's say they have, yeah, they're where they keep them closed at times, and then, for example, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, when they need, they're right, the Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, let's say they'll open them up because they need a larger area. Same idea, it has to be open at least a tefach before Shabbos. Yeah. Okay. Amar Rav Mishum Reb Chiya, Viloin, a curtain that hangs by the door, Mutal and Toisei or Mutal Aparkei b'Shabbos. You're allowed to spread it on Shabbos because it's not an oil. Because it's not kavua over there, it's like a door. So you're allowed to spread it on Shabbos. Umutal the perke b'Shabbos, and you're allowed to take it off the door on Shabbos. Same idea. Kilas chasanim. Similarly, a canopy. Vilon is a curtain. Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah. You have shlosha sedinin hain ha'asu levilon. Yeah. So yeah. Also, the shchivat tamei medras, levilon tamei tamei mes. Yeah, so a villain is a door curtain. Is a curtain that hangs over a door, or whatever. Yeah, they use that in modern Hebrew also. Yeah. Okay. Hilas Chasanim. What about a what about the canopy over the bed of a chasan, which is now normal bed canopies they had in those days had four pillars at the four corners of the bed. This is what the Mishnah in Sukkah calls it, a kinoif, and we say you're not allowed to sleep under it and in a sukkah on sukkahs, because then you're sleeping under an oil, which is separate. But then you have what the Mishnah calls over there Naklite Hamita, where you have two pillars, one at each end of the bed, and therefore when you have the sheet or whatever hanging over it, then it's like a roof of a house. It's like a peaked roof. So that kind of thing also mutter. You have the picture over here in Rashi. Mutter the perka on Tosef Shabbos. Also, you're allowed to put it up and take it down on Shabbos because again it's not an oil. However, for a sukkah, same idea. You'd be allowed to sleep under that on a sukkah because not considered an oil. Amar of Sheshes, Bredir of Idi, but it's not so simple. Loy Amoran Elashain Begaga Tefach. First of all, that only applies if the horizontal part of it is not a Tefach wide. Avo Yesh Begaga Tefach also. But if the horizontal part is a Tefach wide, let's say, for example, you could have the two pillars, you could have the two posts on the two sides themselves are a Tefach wide. So when you spread the curtain over, or you have, let's say, the cross piece that goes between them is a Tefach wide. So therefore, when you spread the sheet over it, you have a horizontal thing of a Tefach, and then it starts sloping down. That would be also, because then you're making an oil. Yeah. And the... if it was partially made before, then fine. But we're talking about to put it up to be... I see what you're saying. Oh, because you're just talking about because the cross piece is a tefach wide. Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Okay, so let's say, for example, you have two cross pieces that are right next to each other, and there's then... Whatever. Let's say you're talking about it's a very stiff. Let's say it's a stiffer kind of thing. And when you put it up over there, you wind up that there's a tefach flat before it starts going down. So then it would be also. V'chi ein begaga tefach lo yamoron. Even if the roof is not of it is not a tefach wide. Also, we don't say that you're allowed to. Ela she'en b'pachas mishloisha samach l'gag tefach. You would also have to have that within three tefachim of the top of it, of the peak of it, it hasn't widened to a tefach, because otherwise three tefachim is lavud. So therefore, if within three tefachim it reaches a width of a tefach, then you have an oil there also. So it would also be also. So it would have to be that's peaked very sharply, so that when you reach a distance, a vertical distance of three tefachim, you don't yet have a width of a tefach between one side and another. Yeah. Three tefachim vertically, one tefach horizontally. Here, if this is the kila over here, the point is, here's the kila over here. The point is, you can't have the top of it be a tefach wide. You also can't have, by the time you reach this point, which is three tefachim from the top, this cannot be a tefach wide. It has to be less. It has to be very skinny. And v'chi. So that's one said. That's another one. V'chi ein b'pachas m'shloisha samach l'gag tefach nami lo yamaron. Even that doesn't help us that you're allowed to. Ella she'ein b'shipua tefach. Only if the slope of it is not a tefach. In other words, you have the diagram here in Rashi. It has to be, in other words, that by the time you reach the bottom of this kila, you have it's less than two tefachim wide. There's less than one tefach on one side and less than one tefach on the other side. Otherwise, if it's wider than a tefach on either side, then you have a slope which is going from here to here and covering an area of more than a tefach. Then it's no good, because then avo yesh b'shipur tefach shipui oilim ka'oilim damu. Then what you have is an inclined oil, a sloped oil, is still considered an oil. In other words, if we're saying it's also to make an oil that covers a tefach, it doesn't matter whether that oil is completely horizontal or whether that oil is slanted. So either way, it's covering an area of a tefach, then you have a problem. Now, so Rashi asks the question, in that case, what kind of bed are you going to have over here? You're going to have a bed that's less than two tefachim wide. How are you even using it? So Rashi says, actually, we have to be talking about a case where you have many posts by each end of the bed. So in other words, not just up until now, we're assuming you have one post in the middle, and you have one post in the middle, and you hang the kila from it like this. Now Rashi is saying, let's say you have a bunch of posts like that. So therefore, so you hang the kila from it. So you have it goes up over here, down in the middle, up again, down, up, down. So it looks like an accordion. So then you have each individual part can have a shipua of less than a tefach, even though the whole bed itself is wide enough to sleep on. That's the picture you have in Rashi over here. You have a picture in Rashi. Imagine you're looking at it from the side where you can see it's going up and down and up and down. And each of those vertical poles over there is one of those naklitin that you have by the side of the bed. Yeah. Mita means the bed. And kozeh means like this. Yeah. Okay. With that said, there are other Rishonim who disagree and say that we're really only concerned about the top 10 Tfachim. Once we get beyond the top 10 Tfachim, then if it widens beyond that, we don't care about that, say those Rishonim. So therefore, to answer Rashi's question, you can have as long as the top 10 Tfachim, as long as by the time you reach a vertical height of 10 Tfachim, you have a horizontal width of less than 2, then we don't care that it widens beyond that. And eventually, by the time it comes down to the bed, it's wide enough to have an actual bed to sleep on. Another din in this connection about oil arai, this we learned in Shabbos, v'amar of shisha bered rav idi, sayona shori. You're allowed to wear a sayona on Shabbos, which is a felt hat. So the question is, v'hatanya osur, don't we learn in a braisa that you're not allowed to wear it? The answer is, lekasha hod isbe tefach, hod lesbe tefach. If the brim is a tefach wide, then it's like an oil. Then you're making an oil over your head on Shabbos. We'll talk about that in a second, how we wear our felt hats nowadays. Hold that thought. Yeah, Shtremlach has another question. Yeah. So the answer is, so it depends whether there's a tefach or not. So the question is, why should that be a problem? Elameata, Sharbiv Viglime. Yeah, it was in Rambam recently, yeah. So Elameata, Sharbiv Viglime Tefach. Are you going to say if a person has, let's say, his cloak, let's say his talus over his head, and he makes it stick out, a tefach over his head, Hochinami da also? Are you going to say such a thing as also? We never find such a thing. No, rather the answer is it depends whether it's mehadak or not. Rashi explains mehadak means tight. So Rashi explains the Gemara is going back now on the whole thing. There's no problem, however wide the brim is. You're right, a brim is not a problem of an oil. The problem is that if the hat is not tight on his head, then it might fall off or blow off, and then he's going to carry it in Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, if it fits tightly on his head, or if he has a strap on it that goes under his chin, like you have on cowboy hats or whatever, then it would be mutter, because then there's no problem that it's going to fall off. It has that thing, right? Our hats have that string that goes around them. Technically, it's meant to be that you take it and put it under your chin and hold the hat in place. I haven't seen anybody doing it, but yeah, but yeah. Okay, so there you go. That's essentially the same thing—a chin piece. Yeah. So now that's all according to Rashi. Tosfos over here brings from Rabbeinu Chananel and so do many other Rishonim that no, we are after all still sticking with the idea that the brim of the hat is an oil, but we're saying there's a difference whether the brim is stiff or not. Mihadak would mean stiff. If the brim is stiff, then it's an oil. If the brim is more floppy, then it's not. So then Tosfos says, according to that, it would come out that a felt hat or a shtreimel or whatever with a brim would be also. However, there are what? Well, that's the point, because it's firm. I mean, because it's stiff. Yeah. On the other hand, though, other Rishonim point out that I think the Rambam mentions, in fact, that it doesn't apply if the brim slopes down. It only applies if the brim is straight out. So in other words, according to them, the only way it would be also is if it's stiff, if it's hard, and it sticks straight out rather than hanging down, and it's a tefach, and rather than being tilted down or curved or whatever, and it's a tefach wide. So that's why our hats go down in front. Well, I mean, the velt doesn't necessarily wear them with the hat down in front. They wear them up all around, but it's still the same thing. It's curved, so therefore it's also fine, but the... So as far as a shtreimel, the regular weekday hats. Oh, they have a little curve at the end, so maybe. Just at the very end. Right. Okay. So maybe that would be a problem. Maybe not. But the poskim do bring what Tosfos says, but they said, you know, there is reason to be matur more based on what Rashi says, that the Gemara is saying in the end that there's no problem of a brim at all. So lemaisa, you know, it's better. It's one of those things. It's better to be careful if you can, but al pi halacha, there is reason to be matur even if the brim is wider than a tefach and stiff and sticks out straight. Yeah. Right. But a hat, because after all, a hat is derech malbush. So, you know, yeah. Okay. Since we mentioned in the previous Mishnah a case where there's a difference in halacha between the Beis HaMikdash and outside the Beis HaMikdash, as far as this bolt, whether it's tied or not tied to the door, whether it drags on the ground, a baseball cap based on that might be also, maybe, I don't know. I mean, the bill of it is curved after, well, the bill of, it's curved this way, it's curved side to side. I don't know if that would make a difference, but yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so now the next few Mishnayos until the end of the Perek, we're going to deal with, until the end of the Masechta, we're going to be dealing with various dinim where you have a similar thing where some a particular kind of thing is mutter in the Beis HaMikdash, but also everywhere else. In general, we have the rule, as we said, ein shvus b'mikdash. In general, we have the rule, ein shvus b'mikdash, that dinim, that isurim d'rabbanan do not apply in the Beis HaMikdash, although we're going to say sometimes they do. They basically, we're going to say they don't apply in the Beis HaMikdash except when they do. So we'll get into that. So yeah. So the Mishnah says, machzir. Now we have to remember, as we said yesterday, the doors that they had in those times, the hinges of the doors weren't like the hinges they have nowadays that are on the side of the door. They were more like pins that go from the top of the door and the bottom, and then they would fit into holes in the door frame. So the Mishnah says, machzirin sira tachtin b'mikdash. If a door partially comes out of a door, let's say of a closet or whatever, so the door partially came out of the frame. So the lower hinge pin came out of the hole. So machzirin sira tachtin b'mikdash. You're allowed to put it back in the Beis HaMikdash. Ava loy b'medina, but not anywhere else because it's also d'rabbanan. As we'll see in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to say, actually, the reason is because you might end up hammering it back in, and that would be a malacha. Rashi learns that what it is we say that, now we haven't we've talked about before the concept. Do we say that there's binyan or stira b'kelim? We know there's malachas on Shabbos of building and of tearing down. Does that apply only to things attached to the ground, or does it also apply to kelim? So Rashi says over here we're talking about that it applies to kelim as well. Therefore, if you hammer it back in, then you're doing an actual malacha. Tosfos points out that that would only be according to Beis Shammai, and we know that halacha is not like Beis Shammai. So rather, Tosfos says that no, we're going to say that is because of Gzeira D'Rabbanan, because you might hammer it back in. But we're going to talk about the Tzira Elyon, whether you're allowed to or not. It's not necessarily because it's a matter of I confuse things. Let's continue the Mishnah, and then I'll explain the distinction that Tosfos is making. Okay, so the Mishnah says again, the lower hinge pin you're allowed to put back in the Beis HaMikdash, but not outside the Beis HaMikdash. D'rabbanan, v'ha'oyen kan v'kan osur. The upper one, that would be osur in both places, because once the upper one came out, then the door is already completely detached. The whole thing is going to fall out, and therefore now Rashi says it would be boina. So that's the thing. So there you would have, even in the Beis HaMikdash, you can't do Isurim Daraisa. Here you have an Isur Daraisa Bona, therefore you wouldn't be allowed to. Tosfos says that no, because again, Ein Binyan B'Kelim. Tosfos elsewhere, by the way, talks about there can be Binyan B'Kelim. If, let's say, you're making a whole new Keli, then you can say there's Binyan or Stira B'Kelim. But here, where you're talking about just putting back in a door that fell off, it wouldn't be Binyan B'Kelim, only according to Beis Shammai, and the Halacha is not like them. Rather, Tosfos says, when it comes to the upper one, that's an Isur d'rabbanan that we are going to say applies even in the Beis HaMikdash. A shvus gdoila, we're going to impose in the Beis HaMikdash again. A smaller shvus we can allow. So therefore, you can put back the lower one, but not the upper one. Yeah. The whole door is going to fall off. The bottom one, exactly. It just keeps it in. Yeah. So Rabbi Yehuda again is Mako, like in the previous Mishnah. Ha'elyon b'mikdash v'atachdim b'medina. The upper one you could put back even in the Beis HaMikdash, because according to him it's not considered bona at all. The whole thing is only also d'rabbanan. Unlike the Tanakh, according to Rashi, the Tanakhama is saying the upper one would be also d'araisa. Rabbi Yehuda is saying it's only also d'rabbanan. According to Tosfos, they both agree it's d'rabbanan, but the Chachamim would say a shvus gadol we can't allow in the Beis HaMikdash. Let's see if we have a picture. No, there isn't. But you can imagine there's a pin going in. Yeah, you have, for example, the hinge went up and down, exactly. One pin went up into the lintel of the door, and the other one went down into the threshold, right? Yeah.
than I'm pictured, because if the top one is more secure than the bottom.
I guess the top one was made more secure because the whole weight of the door hangs on it.
So they probably made the top one
that held more strongly in place or something, yeah. Right. So again, according to Rashi, putting back the top one would be an actual malacha of bona d'oraisa. Again, we're not talking about a door of a house or a building attached to the ground. That would for sure would be bona. We're talking about a door of a closet, for example, that's not attached to the ground. So then Rashi holds it would still be binyan v'kelim, and Tosfos holds no, it would only be also d'rabbanan, because again, like we're going to say that you might the door of the mikdash was, well, no, we're talking about let's say a closet inside. We're talking about again, we're not talking about doors of buildings attached to the ground. That for sure would be bona. We're talking about, let's say, Rashi says, let's say, for example, you have a cabinet in the Bais Hamikdash where they keep, let's say, salt or lavona or ktodos or whatever, and now the door is off its hinges. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Sir Delos Shida Tevel Migdol, or Migdol. So let's clarify. We're talking about the hinge pins of a door of a Shida Tevel Migdol, which are various kinds of large closets or cabinets or whatever. But Mikdash Machzirin, in the Bais Mikdash, you're allowed to put back in the lower hinge. But Medina Durchkin, outside the Bais Mikdash, you're not allowed to actually put it back in. But if it's just starting to come out, then you're allowed to push it back into place. The upper one you're not allowed to put back either in the Bais Hamikdash or anywhere else, because again, then the door is going to completely fall off. Gzeira shemayitka, the gzeira, because you might actually hammer it in place and then you'd be doing a malacha. So Rashi says this Shema Yitka is referring actually back to the Tachtoin. The reason why we're not allowing you to put back the Tachtoin outside the Bais Hamikdash is because you might hammer it in, as opposed to the top one. In other words, Rashi holds like this. The top one, according to the Chachamim, is an actual malacha d'oraisa to put back, because there's binyan v'kelim. The bottom one is only also d'rabbanan, because you put the top one in first, and you put it in very strongly. So that would be real binyan v'kelim, as opposed to the bottom one is only also d'rabbanan, because you might hammer it in, and therefore in the Bais Hamikdash we're going to allow it. According to Tosfos, both of them are only d'rabbanan, but the top one is a shvus gdoila, because you might put it back, because you're likely to put it back in with a hammer or something, and that chachamim are not going to allow even in this mikdash, according to the chachamim. And then you have the bottom one, meanwhile, the bottom one is not in so strongly, so therefore d'rabbanan, it's still also outside the Bais Hamikdash, but in the Bais Hamikdash it'll be mutter. Sometimes we say that each one will remind the other, but sometimes we don't. Sometimes we say something is also, yes. Sometimes the Bais Hamikdash, it's not so much because there are so many people around the Bais Hamikdash. I mean, maybe that factors into it, but in general, we say koinim zrizim heim. We say ein shvus b'mikdash is the usual rule. Yeah. Continues the. The Beis Din had where the Beis Din has to be. Yeah.
Remember those three dinim where the Beis Din had to remind you about planting.
I don't know. All right, anyway, let's go. I don't know. We'll think about it afterwards. All right, let's go on. Gzeira shemayitka. So again, so you're not allowed to put it back as a gzeira that he might hammer it in. According to Rashi, again, this is referring to the lower one. According to Tosfos, it's referring to the upper one. The imtoka chayev chatos. If he actually hammers it back in, then he'd be chayev chatos. That's all when it's a door of a keli. Shall burr, shall dus, shall yitzia. But if we're talking about a burr, if we're talking about a door of a burr, which is in the ground, so let's say you have a cover over the burr, which is on hinges, and you lift it up and then you close the burr, or a dus, which Rashi explains, a dus is similar to a burr, except it's built above ground. So, like, think of, for example, like an above ground swimming pool would be an example of that. Vishalritzia, or of a side room of a building. So, all of those are attached to the ground. So then, lo yachsu, then you're not allowed to put back any kind of hinge pin or any kind of door. Vim hechsu, chayev chatas, and if you do, you chayev chatas, because that's actual boina. When it's attached to the ground, then it's not a question of binyan or stud or bekalim, then it's definitely boina. Even in the Bais Hamikdash, right? Because even in the Bais Hamikdash, you can't do isur and daraisa, yeah. Okay. Another din where we have a difference between the Bais Hamikdash and anywhere else, the Mishnah says, machzirin retia b'mikdash. You're allowed to put back a dressing on a wound in the Bais Hamikdash. Rashi explains the scenario was like this. A kohen's hand or finger or whatever got injured. Now the problem is, so he put on before Shabbos, he put a dressing on it. A dressing is a bandage that has some kind of cream or ointment or something on the inside of it. The problem is when you put such a thing on, you may smear out the ointment, and then that would be a malacha of mimareach, of smoothing like wax or cream or whatever on Shabbos. Like this, he put it on before Shabbos, but then he needed to do the avoda on Shabbos, so he had to take it off because otherwise it would be a chatzitza. Now he wants to put it back on. We allow him to do that in the Bais Hamikdash because Rashi says this is one of the examples that the Gemara calls in a different place. There are certain cases where you have something should be osur because it has nothing to do with the needs of the Bais Hamikdash or anything. But if we don't allow it, then you're not going to do the first part either. You have examples of it in Hilchos Yom Tov, for example, where the Chachamim allow you a later stage of something because if we don't allow it, then you're not going to do the earlier stage either. The same thing over here. The Chachamim realized if you don't allow the Kohen to put back on the dressing, then he's not going to take it off to begin with, and then he's going to miss doing the Avodah. So therefore, they allowed him to put it back for the sake of doing the Avodah, for the sake of the Avodah of the Bais Hamikdash. So, Avaloi b'Medina, but you're not allowed to anywhere outside the Bais Hamikdash, because you might smooth it out. If we're talking about that he's putting on the dressing to begin with on Shabbos for the first time, or let's say, or Rashi, yeah, Rashi says it wasn't on there before Shabbos, he didn't take it off for the Avodah, can also, then either way it's also, because now it's not in Shavuos B'Mikdash, because you're not doing it for the purposes of the B'Mikdash, he's doing it for his own needs, so that would be also. Rashi, by the way, mentions in this connection, you would think that maybe there'd be another problem putting the dressing on. We've learned previously that you're not allowed to do medicinal things on Shabbos. Refuah is also on Shabbos because of Gzeira, that you might grind up spices. Here, Rashi says there's no problem because it was on before Shabbos, so therefore there's no problem that you might do anything. Tosfos brings from other Gemaras that seems to imply that there might be a problem. But the point is that, yeah, even though you have two possible things that a person might be over on, one where you might grind up spices for the medicine, and number two, that he might smooth it out. Nevertheless, if it was on before Shabbos and he's putting it back on Shabbos, we're not going to either of those things and we allow him to do it. Okay, so the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanon, Ritiya Shaporsha Me'al Galimaka, if the dressing came off the wound, it fell off the wound. So now we're talking about he didn't actually take it off. It fell off on its own. You're allowed to put it back on Shabbos because Rashi says that's an uncommon thing that it should fall off. The Chachamim in general don't make Zeris on uncommon situations. No, we're talking about even outside the Bais Hamikdash because it fell off. He didn't take it off. The case we were talking about in the Mishnah is he took it off to do the Avodah, and now we want to know whether we can put it back. But here we're talking about it fell off on its own. So you're allowed to put it back on Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, if it completely fell off, you can't put it back. But huchkalamata, if it slipped down, further down the limb from where the wound was, duchkalamaila, then you can push it back upward, back to where it was supposed to be. Lamaila duchkalamata, if it slipped upward, then you're allowed to push it downward, but not to actually put it back if it fell off. Umegala mixa saratia, you can also take off one side of the dressing, open up one side of the dressing, umkaneach piyamaka, and wipe off the opening of the wound, clear off the dirt or whatever that's collecting over there. Vachozo umegala mixa saratia, umkaneach piyamaka, and then do the same thing on the other side, because you're not taking the dressing off at all. You have to be careful not to wipe the dressing itself, because then you're going to be mamareach. You're smoothing out the ointment or whatever it is that's on the dressing. No. We're talking about the imira chayev chatos, and if he smooths out the ritia, he'd be chayev chatos. He's doing a malacha of mamareach. Okay. Who is the halacha like? So the Gemara says, Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, halacha of Yehuda. So therefore, even if it falls off, you're not allowed to put it back. Even though you didn't take it off b'yadayim, you're still not allowed to put it back. However, Amar of Chista, lo shonu ela shapirsha agabe kli. That only applies if the machloikas of the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda is only if it fell off, but it fell onto a keli. Like it fell onto the table or a chair or whatever, Ava Pirsha, Gabi Karka, but if it fell down onto the ground, then Divrei Hakol also, then everybody would agree it's also to put it back, because then you're putting it back, it's like starting all over new with a new dressing. It might also be dirty, whatever, but yeah. Amar Ma'abrav Ashi. So Ma'abrav Ashi says in this connection, Hava Ke'imna Kamei Abba, I was standing in front of my father, Rav Ashi. Rashi brings a girsa over here, by the way, that he was standing in front of not Rashi, Tosfos rather brings a girsa from Rabbeinu Hananel or actually Tosfos themselves brings a girsa kamei de Rava, that Ma'abar Rashi says I was standing in front of Rava. However, Tosfos says even Rav Ashi himself was only born after Rava passed away, on the day that Rava passed away, or even if we say that's not meant literally, fine, it means he was still fairly young when Rava passed away. Ma'abar Rashi is certainly not old enough to have been around in Rava's time, so therefore the better girsa is like we have kamei de Abba, that he was standing and says I was standing in front of my father Rav Ashi. Anyway, Naflalea Besadia, he dressing on his wound fell off onto the pillow, become a hadule, and he was putting it back. Aminale, Samab Rav Ashi says, I said to my father, Loi Savala Maud, Lahada Amr Chistamachloikas, Pirsha Agabe Kli, Aval Pirsha Agabe Kaka. So, didn't we just say that even Rabbi Yehuda doesn't allow it if it fell on a Kaili? But Amr Shmuel Halacha Rabbi Yehuda. And that Shmuel is telling us that halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. So even if it falls onto the pillow, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you shouldn't be able to put it back. And we're saying that halacha is like him. Rabbi Yehuda is saying that if it falls off, Rav Chista had said that, but that he said that if it falls on the floor, everybody would agree you can't put it back. If it falls on a keli, Rabbi Yehuda would still say you can't put it back, and the Chachamim would say you could. So why are you putting it back if it fell on the pillow? Amali, so Rav Ashi answered, Loi Shmieli, I haven't heard of this, Kaloima Loi Svirli, which amounts to saying that I don't agree with it. So Rashi explains, we're talking about this distinction that Rav Chista is making, that it depends whether it fell on the floor or on a keli. Rav Ashi says, I don't hold of that distinction. No, the mission didn't say any such thing. The mission just said, Machzirin Ritiyah B'Mikdash. The mission just said, you can put back the Ritiyah in the B'Mikdash versus the Medina. The distinction that we made where the Chachamim wouldn't allow it, if it fell on the floor, if it fell on the ground, that was Rav Chista. Rav Ashi is an Amora. He can argue with Rav Chista. So I didn't hear of this, meaning I don't accept it, that there should be that difference. I say that we're saying that if it fell off, you're allowed to put it back. Then you're telling me that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't allow it, that even Rabbi Yehuda doesn't allow it if it fell on the keli. I don't hold of that. I hold it's only talking about if it fell on the floor. So if it fell on the floor, then Rabbi Yehuda would say it. You can't put it back. But here it fell on the pillow, therefore I'm allowed to. Another way of understanding what Rav Ashi is saying is that I don't agree with the statement that we're saying the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. I hold that the halacha is like a chachamim. So therefore, in that case, they're saying you're allowed to put it back if it falls off. Even preposterous, it would be even on the floor. The halacha l'maisa is we do accept that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. We do accept Rav Chista's distinction. And therefore we say that, yes, so if it fell off, if you took it off, you're not allowed to put it back. If it fell off, I don't remember what the halacha is if it fell on the floor. If it fell on a keli, you're definitely allowed to put it back. If it fell on the floor, I don't remember what the... That's the code. That's in the Bais Hamikdash because in Shavuos Hamikdash. But outside that, yeah. So I don't remember actually what the halacha is if it falls on the floor. I think we say that you can't put it back, but I'm not sure about that. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let's see if we can knock off this Mishnah and the Gemara on it real quick. The Mishnah says, "Koshrin nima b'mikdash avaloi b'medina." You will now. Here's another thing. The Levim had harps or violins or whatever in the Bais Hamikdash. Suppose that one of the strings of them breaks. You're allowed to retie the string in the Bais Hamikdash avaloi b'medina, but not outside the Bais Hamikdash. Now here you have tying as an av malacha, and yet you're allowed to do it because. Once the bow ties we're going to talk about, one second, but we're talking about Bepashtos, we're talking about over here, a real knot, because it's an example of Machshirei Mitzvah, of something that's not part of the Mitzvah itself, but it's an essential prerequisite to the Mitzvah that couldn't have been done before Shabbos, because before Shabbos, the string wasn't broken. So you'd be allowed to do that in the Mitzvah. Avaloi b'medina, but not outside the Mitzvah. The imbetchila, if you're talking about putting a string in to begin with, which you could have done that before Shabbos, can b'kan also, then it would be also in the Mitzvah or outside of it. So the Gemara says, Uraminhu, I have a contradiction. You're telling me that you're allowed to tie the string on Shabbos, but a Braisa says, Nimas kino shenifsika. If the string of the harp breaks on Shabbos, loy hoya koshra, you're not allowed to you're not allowed to tie it with a regular knot. Elo oinva, you can only make a bow tie. So what is it? The answer is like Kasha Harabbanan v'Harab Eliezer. The answer is the Mishnah versus the Braisa, or the opinions of the Chachamim versus Rabbi Eliezer. We learned in Masech the Shabbos, you have, for example, there's going to be a bris on Shabbos. You had machshirei milah that weren't done before Shabbos. Are you allowed to do them on Shabbos? Let's say, for example, you didn't have a knife. Rabbi Eliezer allows you to be mechal Shabbos to bring it. The Chachamim don't. So the same thing over here. L'Rabbi Eliezer d'amar machshirei mitzvah d'eichin es haShabbos. According to Rabbi Eliezer, that even the machshir, now the mitzvah, the singing on the harp itself is the mitzvah. By the way, there is a machloikas in other places in Shas, whether the main part of the mitzvah is the shir of a pair or the shir of a kli, or a mishnah, and then the gemara on it obviously is going according to the opinion that the shir of ikur shir of a kli, and therefore the instruments have to be played on Shabbos. So the, and Rabbi Eliezer holds that even machshirei mitzvah are doicha Shabbos. So therefore, kosher, therefore you're allowed to tie it with a real knot. According to the Chum, that it's not doicha, oinva, then you can only make a bow tie. So the question is, according to Rabbi Eliezer, why are we saying dafka if the string broke? Rabbi Eliezer, after all, allows you, for example, even to make a mila knife on Shabbos, to actually melt metal and make a mila knife, even if you could have made it before Shabbos, because he holds machshirei mitzvah are always doicha Shabbos. The same thing, you could have put the string in before Shabbos. Why does Rabbi Eliezer care? Either way, it should be mutter. So why is the Mishnah telling us that you can only that you can't put in a new string to begin with? Ella, like Kasha, Harab Yehuda v'Harab Banan. No, we can answer then that it's Rabbi Yehuda versus the Chachamim, where we've learned before. Rabbi Yehuda says that a bow tie is also daraisa on Shabbos, and the Chachamim are saying a bow tie. We learned before that Rabbi Yehuda still holds that a bow tie is considered a real knot, and it's also on Shabbos. So therefore, there's no difference whether you're making a bow tie or a regular tie, a regular knot. So he holds that machshirei mitzvah doichin. So therefore, you might as well make a regular knot, because it doesn't make a difference. According to the Chacham, they're not doicha. Therefore, so according to the Chachamim, we would say that machshirei mitzvah maybe are doicha Shabbos also, but still we should try to avoid chilul Shabbos when possible. Therefore, make a bow tie instead of a regular knot. One second. I know. Okay, so yeah. We're going to get to that point soon. So the question is, Rabbi Yehuda al libidaman, if Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you can make an actual knot, then we have to ask, which opinion, as far as the machloikas of Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, which opinion does Rabbi Yehuda hold by? E al libid Rabbi Eliezer kama, again, if Rabbi Yehuda is talking according to Rabbi Eliezer, afilo l'hatchila nami, then again, you should be able to put in a new string to begin with. Why is Rabbi Yehuda telling us that you're allowed to tie the existing broken string, but not put in a new one? That doesn't seem to work according to Rabbi Eliezer. And if you say he holds like the Chachamim, then you shouldn't be allowed to make a bow tie, to make a regular knot or a bow tie, according to him. So, Ella like Kasha Harab Shimon Harabanan. No, rather, we can answer that the machloikas between the Mishnah and the Braisa is Rab Shimon versus the Chachamim. What is the machloikas? The Tanya, Ben Levi Shinifsika Lainima Bekiner, a Ben Levi where a string of his violin broke, Koshra, he can tie it on Shabbos. Rab Shimon Oma Oinvo, Rab Shimon says he can only make a bow tie. Rab Shimon, so in other words, the Chachamim again hold that machshirei mitzvah are doichin, but only where you couldn't have done it before Shabbos. Where you could have done it before Shabbos, they say you have to have done it before Shabbos. Therefore, in this case, you're allowed to tie it because you couldn't have done it before Shabbos, but not to put in a new one. Reb Shimon says it's not doicha Shabbos. Therefore, all you can do is make a bow tie because a bow tie is not considered a knot according to him. Only according to Rabbi Yehuda is it a knot. Reb Shimon Elazar Omer, and then Reb Shimon Elazar says you make either a knot or a bow tie. It's not going to work. Af hi ena mashmas sakol, like you said, violins don't have, you don't make knots in the strings. If you make a knot, the string is not going to vibrate nicely. It's not going to make a good sound. So what good does it do? What good does it do in order to tie it? If you want to make, if you're trying to make it, you should be able to play the instrument on Shabbos, then tying is not going to help. Ela mishalsho milamata v'kodach milamayla, oy mishalsho milamayla v'kodach milamata. What you do is like this. The strings are wound around pegs, like you have on a violin or a guitar. Nowadays, we have tuning pegs at the end of the instrument. You always have, therefore, the string is long enough that you're able to get it from one peg to another, and then you tie the extra of it around the peg. So in this case, if the string breaks in the middle, okay, so you still have, there's usually going to be enough of the string left that you can still stretch it from one peg to the other and be able to then wind it around the peg rather than tying. So Shimon Elazar would say, in other words, don't bother tying at all. Just take the, so now the Chachamim would say that after all, pulling the string from one end to the other is also an av malacha. It's makel patish. You're making the instrument usable where it wasn't before. So therefore, so, uh, so, So, and the problem is that then if you do that, you might put in a whole new string, which would definitely be a malacha d'oraisa. Therefore, they say better to tie it. Whereas Rav Shimon Elazar is saying, look, either way, you're doing an av malacha, and anyway, if it's tied, it's not going to play well. Therefore, you might as well do mishalshal. I mishalshal is closer to an av malacha. Okay, but we're saying you're allowed to do a malacha for something that had to be done in the Mishmash on Shabbos. Yeah. Yeah, the Iboyase, or yet another possibility about the Mishnah versus the Braisa, Hava HaRabbanon, both of them can be according to the Rabbanon, meaning that it's not Doicha Shabbos, is that it's, unless you couldn't have done it before Shabbos, but Veloikasha kan be'emtza, kan minatzad. It depends, where did the break take place? Is it in the middle of the string, or is it closer to one end? If it's closer to one end, then you're able to pull it tighter and wind it around the thing over there, so then don't tie it. Whereas if broke in the middle, then you have no choice but to tie it. One last possibility is both of them, it's talking about it broke in the middle. Actually, it actually says the other way around. Sorry. If it broke in the middle, then you're not going to be able to use it at all. Therefore, if you make a bow tie, it's not going to be good enough. It's not going to play well. It's not going to hold. Therefore, you have to make a real knot. As opposed to if it's closer to one end, you don't have as much pressure on it because you don't pull on that part so much, then a bow tie will work. The boy same, or the last possibility, hava habemza, both of them are talking about that it's in the middle. And it is the machlokas of Shimon and the Chachamim from the Braisa that we quoted before about whether you should make a bow tie or a wheel knot. Marsava gazrinan or marsava like gazrinan, but Reb Shimon will say we're going to make a gzera that if you do in the middle, you might come to do it on the side where it's less necessary, where there you could have gotten away with a bow tie. And the Chum say you don't make such a gzera, and therefore if it's in the middle, then you're allowed to tie with a real knot. Okay.